The FT.
Peter Harwood's job as chief conciliator at ACAS has given him a unique insider's view into the transformation of industrial relations in Britain. He spoke to me on the eve of his retirement about what he does and how the government-funded service has changed since he joined it. You joined ACAS 28 years ago,
yes. The point is, in ACAS, you're not in ACAS for that 28 years. I've spent most of that time outside in other organisations,
right,
helping them resolve problems.
Right.
You start on the tribunal cases. A lot of people don't realise that that's the biggest area of ACAS's work.
Is it? No, I didn't realise that.
Whenever anybody is wanting to put in a tribunal claim, you know, ACAS gets involved.
Is that automatic then?
It is now. It didn't used to be. It's still voluntary and people don't have to use it. They have to register the fact that they want to make a claim now. This is what's called early conciliation, which just came in April this year. In the past, it was whenever they actually made a claim, we would get sent a copy of it.
Right.
And about 75% of them don't proceed to the tribunal.
Right.
So it's a very good settlement rate.
Yeah.
And so you start doing those about 250 cases a year. And then you move on from that after about 4 or 5 years and moved on to what we call collective work. You're starting just to focus on work with trade unions and sort of groups. You do advisory work, a bit like consultancy, in that we would, you know, if the people had problem relationships, then we'd go in talking about what the problems were, how we might put them right. But it was all done on a joint basis, so we weren't like a management consultant who went in and just did a report for management.
Mm.
We would say, well, this has to be shared with the workforce, you know, and they have to be involved. That's the way we'd operate.
Right.
And the other bit we do would be when there's actual disputes, so the collective conciliation. So in terms of the, as I say, the individual conciliation is the largest bit that we do, about 80,000 cases a year.
Right, right. I hadn't realised that. I think I thought it was mostly the kind of the collective stuff that...
No, no.
Yeah, maybe that's just the stuff that we hear about more, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the, you know, that's the known bit, the brand is when you have a dispute.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a helpline which gets nearly 1 million calls a year.
Wow.
What's the website figures? 4.5 million visitors or something like that. Quite high volume stuff, which just all goes on under the surface of the thing without people realising it. And I would deal, my responsibility is the collective conciliation, and we would deal with, what's last year, about 850, 860 disputes.
Mm.
So I'd, at the national, the big ones at the centre, I would deal with about 25, 30.
Each year?
Each year, yeah.
That seems like quite a lot. I mean, how long does it take to settle one of these things?
On average, it takes us 2.2 days.
Very specific.
Yeah. Well,
that's
if you
quite
add
quick,
it all together.
Yeah,
well, it is.
Yeah.
Well, most of the straightforward ones are done within in a day.
Really?
You know, you'll have a bit of a briefing meeting, or at least a phone call from each side.
Mm.
Call them in, and normally in a day we would resolve it. You've got other ones, I mean, with Royal Mail, I've been involved there for 6 years. The ones at national level do tend to be a bit longer than that. They're just a bit more challenging.
What's the sort of process if you're handed one of these things and you've got these two parties, you seem to have irreconcilable differences?
Again, it depends. Ideally, you would have some sort of briefing beforehand.
Mm.
Sometimes, if, you know, the strike's due to happen the next day and, you know, they've said, yes, we'll come in, then you might not have that time. You know, you'll have to do that on the, you know, on the day.
Mm.
After we've had those first couple of discussions, I know more about the possibilities of that dispute than they do.
Yeah.
Because they will have told me things they won't have told each other.
Right. Yeah.
Right, so you've got a better idea of what the scope for settlement is,
mm-hmm,
and what the scope for movement is. Well, it's very much about influencing and sort of persuasion. You know, as I say, we're impartial, so we're not pro the union or pro the employer, but we are not neutral. You know, so we are trying to promote a settlement. So you're trying to get people to think through where they are and what the implications are. It's a bit like marriage guidance, I always think, because the thing you've got with collective cases, which you often don't have with individual cases, because the person's left the employment, you know, if they've been sacked or whatever.
Mm.
With the collective cases, they're all going to have to live with each other after.
That's true.
You know, they've
got
a continuing relationship here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's getting people to think, you know, to think through that about, well, you know, so if you give them a good kick in now, how do you think they're going to be in the future, you know?
Mm.
And it's all done like that, you see. It's all done through questions, not through statements.
Not you telling them things.
No, so I wouldn't say, well, if you give them a good kicking now, you know, next time you have your pay round, they're going to be coming back for a bit more, you know. And one of my little stock phrases is that, the, you know, the ACAS brand opens the door, that gets you into the dispute, But then it's the ACAS skills which open the mind. You know, we're trying to get people to be a bit more open about what the possibilities might be.
And is it that thing of kind of making people really look at where is this going? You know, if you stay on this track, do you really like what the destination is going to look like? You know.
Yeah, so what's going to happen if you do have a strike? You know, so what about your suppliers? Won't be able to make deliveries, you know. These days, with just-in-time, you know, techniques and all the rest of it, how's that going to affect your supply chain? You know, so it's getting people to think through unions. What if, you know, you're calling your members out, what if half of them don't come out? You know, what does that say for your credibility? You know, so you're getting them to think this is a, it's a big step, and do they really want to take that step? I remember one colleague used to say it was a bit like you're taking the two parties to the sort of the edge of the cliff and that letting them look over and just see how high the cliff is and how sharp the rocks are below. You know, that was,
what has been, through your career, what has been the hardest conciliation that you've worked on, do you think?
I mean, in terms of challenging, the Royal Mail one has been the most challenging. You know, when I think where they were in a very adversarial industrial relations to where they are now, well, it's not perfect yet, but a lot further on the journey to actually working together.
The whole landscape of industrial relations must have changed an awful lot since you first started. What do you think has changed, and why?
Well, I mean, the nature of the world of work has changed, isn't it? So, you know, in manufacturing, you know, is a heck of a lot less than it was. That was where the unions had their strongest sort of power base. You know, now it's much more service industry, which has always been more difficult to organise, you know. But having said that, Usdaw, you know, the retail union, is one of the few unions putting membership on. And they work, you know, very much in terms of a partnership approach, this adult-adult approach, yeah.
Right.
So they work with Tesco's in particular, have a very good relationship with them. So I think it has changed. I mean, when you think back in the 70s, so when I started in the civil service was 78, and, I mean, ACAS then was dealing with about 3,000 disputes a year. But, of course, what's changed was, I mean, when I came into ACAS in 86, there was 12 employment rights jurisdictions. There's now over 70 rights that people have. And a lot of those disputes would have been about individual issues or discrimination or somebody being sacked. You know, there's a bit about one out, all out, you know. So there's, you know, somebody's sacked unfairly, right, we'll all go out on strike, you know. That's what was happening in the 60s. That's why they brought in the unfair dismissal right. And as those rights have grown, I mean, you can do it. We've got the graphs, you know. You can see the disputes going down like that, you know, tribunal claims going up like that, you know. So that's, you know, that's the world of work's changed in that sense, that how I like to characterise it is that, you know, before the sort of 70s, well, in 60s, 70s or whatever, it was win-lose in relation to whoever had the collective strength. Then with all the rise in employment rights, it's still win-lose, but it's people fighting their own individual battles.
Right.
What we'd like to get to, and this is what, you know, ACAS's underlying ethos is, to get to a win-win situation where the people actually work together, you know, not in an adversarial way.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.